Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of Responsive Design Weekly Podcast. My name is Justin Avery, and I am your host and curator of the Responsive Design Weekly newsletter. A newsletter all about things responsive, and it's all about a whole lot of other stuff these days. Because like I've said in the last couple, it is just about web design these days. Responsive design is kind of, it's not old hat, it's what we do now, but it has changed. It's not the new kid on the block anymore. I've been away for a little while. I've been busy. It's been crazy, and I've just come back on, and I've been trying to get this. I've got a Rode Podcaster mic, which I use to do the podcasting. So I hope it sounds good. But for some reason, it's a bit temperamental today, and it doesn't want to fit into the holder. So I now have to do broadcast style, as if I am doing a pitch report for cricket, working for Channel 9. So I've got the microphone in my hand, so you can probably hear as I move it around my hand a bit. There's a bit of excess noise, so I'm sorry about that. But let's not worry about that too much. Let's get into what has been happening this week. Now, earlier in this week, I sent out a survey to what I will call some VIP subscribers to the newsletter. These are people who are ranked in, like, they're either 4 or 5 stars with a MailChimp. And the reason they get ranked that way is because they open newsletters and they click on newsletters lots, which is great. It just means they interact with the newsletter a lot. And they're, I mean, I want everyone's opinion for it, but they're the people that are most likely to respond. So I sent it out to a few of them, and I had a really great response. So I've almost got a 1 in 5 response from them. We're up to 912 responses. And so what I was looking at is responsive web design in 2016 in the future. And so I said, as we approach the end of 2016, what are the areas of website design and development that you're still struggling with? And what would you most like me to be covering more in the future? And then I went through and listed a whole bunch of random topics. Well, they're not random topics. They're topics that I thought people might be interested in. So things like improving performance or task runners. And for task runners, like Grunt and Gulp and Broccoli, I wanted to know whether or not people were still struggling with getting started with it, or whether they were more looking at workflows and build processes. So they've got the grasp of the basics of these things, and they're now just looking at, okay, now how do I up my game in them? And so I went through, and so there's responsive images, responsive tables, media queries in JavaScript, element or container queries, how to handle navigation, pre-processes, offline first, progressive enhancement, responsive typography, media queries level 4. There's a whole heap of them, basically. And then I just said to people, is there anything else that you'd like to say? Lay it on me now. You don't have to if you don't want to. And then an email address if you were keen for me to get back and ask any questions that I might have on your answers. And so from the responses, and this will go out in the newsletter this week as well, to the wider, so to everyone this time. But overwhelmingly, so 60% of respondents said that improving performance is their number one thing. So improving performance is the highest ranked thing that people want to know more about. Responsive images comes in at about 57.7%. And then we have responsive typography over 50%. So the ones that hit over 50% are improving performance, responsive images, responsive typography, Flexbox, SVG, CSS grid layout. Now that is interesting. So I'm really glad that people said that. People were least keen to hear about syndication. So I've talked about syndication in the past, where we push the content from our websites out to different areas so that they can be consumed multiple devices across different platforms. And yeah, no one really cares. So maybe I should just stop harping on about it. AMP was really low as well in terms of what people were keen to hear about. Critical CSS was quite low. So it was really interesting. Task runners, the getting started was very low, but the workflows are a bit higher. So I'm going to look at a couple of these topics. I also asked people to, like I said, like let me know if there's anything else that you would like me to talk about, or if you want to say anything. And some of the, I found it really funny. There were some great comments back. Like I am just focusing on the negative ones at the moment, but. And some of them are out of context as well. I'm making them sound more negative than they were because they did follow up with some stuff. But someone said, I found the newsletter solid, but not spectacular. Cheers. Thank you. I don't go for spectacular. I just go for solid, standard, not rubbish. Someone else said, I'm actually annoyed when any one article appears in multiple newsletters, as that highlights the overlap that you as the curator should strive to eliminate. I totally agree with you on that point. But the other point is it's sometimes difficult. You won't. So I know that three newsletters have come out this evening that I'm subscribed to, and they already have links in it that I've written about and I've commented about and I want to share. So I'm sorry that you see the links in multiple newsletters. Take it as a sign that is a really good article that everyone wants to share. And the other benefit of getting in multiple areas as well is a lot of people, I know if CSS Trick sends out a weekly or fortnightly newsletter, Smashing Magazine sends out a fortnightly newsletter. Now, if they cover the same kind of topics or the same articles, they'll cover it in a slightly different way. So these aren't just sort of like link lists. They have some commentary around them. So they talk about what they think about the article. And I hope that's something that that people can take away from the newsletters that get sent out for Responsive Design Weekly. I may not be right. My opinions may be a bit rubbish, but they're my opinions. And hopefully it opens your eyes into a different approach to the article. Or perhaps I pulled something out of it that you may not have. As well, that's the idea about it. So I think it's a good thing if people should have it. Someone said pre-processors should include stylus. So when I had the pre-processors there, I said, "Do you want pre-processors? Do you want to know about SAS or less?" I left stylus out. I'm sorry, I don't use stylus. It's not as popular, but absolutely right. I should include some stuff on stylus as well as I come across. another one which said, "To be honest, I don't read it every week." Thanks. Cheers for the honesty. I sometimes don't read it every week as well when it hits my inbox, but I still try to get it out every week. But sorry if it's not interesting enough. Someone else said I would rather see only good articles instead of more articles, and that's a valid point as well. I sometimes look for quantity, and I search for articles if they're not quite. If it doesn't look full enough, I will try and find more. And perhaps I should just let that slide. If there's not enough written that week, then hopefully it'll kick people in the butt to write some more stuff. I thought that was quite cool. The final, what else was it? I don't want to get excited about something that I can't use in production. So that would be something like grid. So the grid CSS grid spec you can't use in production. Well, you could do, but none of the browsers support it. So it's one for the future. But it's really exciting. I think sometimes I think a good mixture of things that you can use in your day-to-day life and things that excite you, side projects that you can get and like really get into the guts of it. So when it does become mainstream, like you're the expert then. You know how to build it. You know what's going on. You've done that stuff as it was being built up. Someone said versioning from SitePoint is probably their favorite newsletter. I haven't got that one, but that sounds cool. I'm going to subscribe to that and see what it's like. The newsletters tend to be a bit long in terms of the time it takes to go through all the linked articles. Sorry about that. You don't have to go through all of them if you don't want to. Again, I try not to make it too long. I just want to share everything that is relevant. There is a You should see the list of the stuff that doesn't get in the newsletter. Holy man, that's long. But thank you for the feedback anyway. And then the last one, I felt bad. No ads. Find a better way to make your money than bother me with ads. So that's, again, that's fair. That's everyone has their own opinion. I'm sorry. The ads are really helpful. MailChimp is expensive. I don't really have another way to make money. I do a day job. This is kind of a part-time thing. And there's one ad in there. And I try and curate those ads so that it's stuff that I would recommend anyway. It's not like if someone who is building a I hate responsive design thing, or like if someone wanted to build something with React and provide no fallback, and like if someone was doing something which I didn't believe in. Not that I don't believe in React, I'm just trying to think, like someone wasn't building something progressively and they're like, no, this is the way to go and advertise it, here's some money, I wouldn't take it. I'd rather promote someone, something that I believe in as well. But I mean, you raise a good point. People don't like to be bothered with ads, and I'm sorry about that. But it is a natural part of being I could call myself a publisher. I've got to pay for stuff to be able to send it out to you. And as much as I love to do it, I don't love to spend loads of money. I don't mind doing it. Laura has other ideas about that. So the ads will stay. I'm sorry. I did think, what if everyone paid $1 a week? That's not much. It's not much for a lot of the people. But then I was like, $1 a week, that's like $52 a year. That is a lot of money. When you look at it in that way, and then it's like, well, maybe $10 a year. It's just really difficult. No one's going to pay the money. And I feel bad asking you for money because I want this to be a free resource that you enjoy, that you get. And if you see something cool or someone can advertise in front, then that's pretty cool. One thing that I did see, and I wonder if this would be considered an ad, is job posting. So I had an email, and I thought this was terrific as well. I had an email for someone. So for anyone, if anyone is working in America, in the US, so I'm sorry, this is a US only job. So I'm sorry to everyone else who isn't based in the US. And I'm sorry to everyone who's listening who actually wanted to hear about what was happening in responsive design this week. And I've just gone off on a slight tangent, but I will come back to that. So I got an email through from someone at ESPN. And I was like, oh, this is cool. What do ESPN want? And it was someone, it was Heather Donahue. And she was just saying, hey, I'm looking to fill a front-end developer role in my team, and I'm finding it hard to fill it. And I was hoping there was a way to reach your community to let them know that this job going. Is there a way that I can place the job description? It's remote. It's part-time. It's 29 hours a week. It's a great opportunity for someone to build up their experience. Here's a link. Go and check it out. Now, I love the stuff that ESPN are doing, the New York Times are doing. I love the stuff that The Guardian are doing here, Vox Media are doing. Like, there's all these awesome news publications, publishers that are just doing brilliant stuff. And I kind of said, look, that's great. Like, I've got half my subscribers are from the US, so people will definitely see that stuff. But then I was like, well, because you've approached me in this way, I'm more than happy to run it once, and I hope you get someone. If you want to do something on a continual basis, then let your HR department know, because I know that HR pay a lot of money for ads and job boards and stuff as well. I was like, well, if I'm going to advertise your role for you, then maybe I get a bit of that budget as well. So that could be a way that that I could do it, because it's helping you if you want the job. It's helping people who are hiring to get good people in as well. So that could be possible. But so for those of you who are keen, you're in the States, you want to work remotely, it is just for within the US, and ideally the person should be in the Northeast, but absolutely it is open to anyone. And they're looking for someone who they can bring aboard that can collaborate during work hours and push their designers to create more innovative and dynamic designs. And they want you to make that a reality with JavaScript and CSS. So the development environment that they work in is independent from the main site architecture. So you're really able to say, you know, sometimes you work for large organizations. You're like, yeah, I'm gonna trailblaze this, and then all of a sudden, someone's like, yeah, but you've got to adhere to these standards, man. And the CMS, you can't put that in the CMS. That won't work. You need to find another way. And all of a sudden, all your creativity and the stuff that you want to do is just stolen from you, and you're bummed, and you're like, this isn't so cool. But it sounds as though this isn't that kind of place. Anyway, check it out. Go to the show notes and you will see a link to the job. But if you go check it out, jobs.espncareers.com, and then search for a part-time senior front-end editorial developer, then you should check that out. Or, you know, reach out to Heather Donahue at ESPN and see how you're going. So that is the longest introduction without actually talking about anything in particular I think I've done. So let's check out. I think I have two articles flagged here. There should have been more. The first one is from Charlotte Jackson. Charlotte works out of a cool little place, cool little agency in Brighton in England called Clear Left. And she's been writing some really awesome stuff recently. She started speaking recently as well. Very, very clever front-end developer. And she's talking about at supports. And so this is a new kind of, we have media queries and we can query for the width of the screens, the viewport. You know this, you build responsive designs. But this at supports is a kind of a very similar one, but instead of querying the viewport, or is it like, is it a print? We do, it's not at media, because that's a media query. It's like a media query. We do at supports. So whereas we would go at media min width 30 ms, and then anything that we write after that declaration will be applied to viewports with a minimum width of 30 ms. Right? So for this, we write at supports, and then same thing, at supports, bracket, and then we give it the thing that we are looking for support for. So one of the things that I think is really cool is in CSS at the moment is shapes. Now, I'm trying to do a Winnie the Pooh shape where I have Winnie the Pooh as the image and the text runs around the outside of Winnie the Pooh, and it's a part of a story. It's him doing his up, down, touch the ground, puts me in the mood. And it just looks kind of cool. But if the shape CSS property isn't supported, then it will just do its usual like rag it right up against the image, and it will be square, so it'll look kind of rubbish. Now you could use Modernizer and say have the test to say, does it support shape outside, and then give me this capability, and then you write that into the HTML. So you have Modernizer, it tests. And then in the HTML, if it supports it, it puts the class in there to say shape outside, and then you can use that class to target and then write your CSS that way. So that's one way you can do it, and that's the way that a lot of us do it at the moment. But this other way, you do at supports, bracket, and then shape outside, colon, circle. And because that's the thing that we are applying to, that's the style we're applying, and so we're just saying if it supports it, and then you do your curly brackets where you write your queries. So if it was a media query and it was larger than 30 ms, then that's the query, then those styles are applied. Here it's at supports, shape outside, circle, and if it supports it, then run the code that is in there. Now, I think this is really cool because it then allows you to do cool stuff show me. So what you could then do is, if you want to make some changes to the image, right? So we want the image to be circular, and we want the text to wrap around that circle beautifully. Now, if it can't wrap around it because it doesn't support the shape outside property, then we don't really want the image to be a circle, because then there's all this like extra space where the image used to be, and we just don't want that. We would rather a square image, because that's how the text is going to wrap around it. And this is in Charlotte's example. So we then define the shape. We do the at supports, but this time we say at supports shape outside circle and border radius 25 m. So if it supports both of those things, then we apply the shape outside, which gives the text the curve, and we also apply the border radius to the shape as well, which gives the circle-ness to the image. So, you know, the hardest thing in the world is to describe CSS on the radio, but I hope you get that. The link to Charlotte's article will be in the show notes. But at supports is terrific. It just means that we can write tests to see if the browser is supporting something, and then include all of our CSS that we would write to take advantage of that particular browser support in our CSS itself. We don't have to have Modernizer running to check to see if it's valid. Now, the only thing... And you're like, well, what's the support on at supports? And that is a very good question. So again, we go over to can I use and look for the at supports support. Now, it's pretty well supported. So we're looking at Edge, all of Firefox, all of Chrome, Safari 10 and up, Opera 40 and up, which is the current one, and same as Safari. Safari 10 is the current one. iOS Safari 10 and up, which is the current one. Opera Mini, it partial support, but it uses an older API. And then Android browsers and Chrome for Android both support it as well. That support is the CSS.supports API. The CSS feature query, which is the at supports thing that I have been talking about, has pretty much the same support, actually, everything I just went through. So let's just say the great thing about this is what isn't supported: IE 11 and less, Safari 8 and less, and iOS Safari 7.1 and less. Everything else that is current works. Firefox 4 editions before, Chrome lots of editions before, Opera Mini awesome, Android awesome. So I think this is the thing. This is definitely something you should start using, and I think at supports may be the snippet of the week for next week's newsletter. So definitely check out at supports and Charlotte's article in the show notes. Now, let me just, where am I? Where is this? There was one other thing that I wanted to talk about, and I think I've lost it. It was right here. Oh, this is such bad radio. I'm really sorry. Right, so let me just call up Pinboard again, and we'll get the one other responsive design thing that we were going to talk about tonight. I'm sure it came from Chris Coyer and CSS Tricks. What have we got here? We've got enhancements. We've got, it was around AMP. So I'm not going to get on my high horse about AMP much this week. But before we get into that, was the other one. So it is from CSS Tricks. There is a double tap link issue that we have on mainly on iOS, really. So if you have a hover state for something, so just say you might show a pseudo element when you hover over it, or you show something else when you hover over it. What Apple do on Safari is that when you click on that once, it activates the hover state, and then you have to click on it again to activate the link itself. So if you've got the hover on an anchor, you click on the anchor, it doesn't activate that anchor, it shows the hover state, and then you have to click again and go through. Super pain in the butt. On Android, it will show the hover state temporarily before then taking you through to the link. So you still get it yourself, but that's pretty crappy. If you happen to use Fast Click, which is a JavaScript, little tiny JavaScript library that was built by Financial Times, so github.com/ftlabs/fastclick, that was devised to take away the 300 millisecond delay in taps on mobile websites as well. And yeah, there's an article here which sort of explains a couple of other ways, but FastClick works, and hopefully they will fix this up in the future, because browser support for some of the fixes in there are a bit sketchy. And then the last thing is the AMP thing, and this is going into the presentation. So this is one of the things that I'll be talking about in San Diego in a couple of weeks, and it's around AMP and how easy it is to just get started with AMP if you're using something like WordPress. A little more difficult for non-supported, for something else, but still very, very possible. And on this website here, it was a post, the amphtml.wordpress.com, from the 16th of December, why is AMP so fast? And it goes through all the different things. There's lazy loading, use of pre-connect, prefetching lazy loaded resources. So there's a whole bunch of things as to why it's so fast. Now, that is brilliant, and it's really good that they're sharing this stuff with us. What I think we should do is do jump on the AMP bandwagon. You will rank higher. They say you won't. You will in Google. It's Google stuff. They will put you higher. The natural thing is when you do a Google search now on mobile, you might get the AdWords at the top, but the news results are all going to be AMP-related results. If you have a native app and you allow that native app to be indexed by Google, so you feed out your feed so that it's indexable, so that when someone clicks on the link, what used to happen is that it would fire the native app up, and then you would be able to see the content within the native app. If you now offer an AMP version of that page, it won't fire up your native app. It will just show you the AMP version of that rather than take you off. So Google's like, stay in our ecosystem, baby. We want to take care of you, and we want your experiences to be fast, which I like the fast part of it. But yeah, so there's this list of all the different things that it does. So lazy loading, we can do that on our websites. Pre-connect, all right? So that's in this week's newsletter about pre-connect. Actually, I'm doing pre-render in this week's newsletter, but it's basically connecting, doing the HTTP handshakes and the DNS lookups ahead of time so that the subsequent requests are faster. We can do that in our websites. Prefetching of lazy loaded resources, right? So using pre-render, prefetch, we can do that with our websites these days. All async JavaScript, we can load JavaScript asynchronously in our websites. Inline style sheets, we can do this. We have critical CSS, and then we can asynchronously load in our style sheets afterwards, cache it so that we don't need it again. It does have a cool thing because all JS in AMP has the async attribute, and only inline styles are allowed. There's no request blocking the browser from downloading fonts. So kind of it's the only thing. But I mean, same thing goes. If it's all async and we're doing critical CSS, then there's nothing blocking the fonts from downloading. Instant loading through pre-rendering, we can do that with our websites. Pre-rendering only download resources above the fold. I don't think we can do that. I don't think we can do a pre-render of a page for only... Yeah, I don't think we can do that in our websites. But that's cool. I like that. Essentially what that means is that if it's going to pre-render something somewhere else, it will only pre-render what will be visible in the viewport. But I suppose you might be able to do that, but I don't think you can. But that's cool. Well done, AMP. Pre-render does not render things that might be expensive in terms of CPU. We can do that. We can just select things not to be pre-rendered in our meta tag. Resource prioritization, that's fair enough. I don't know if we can. I don't know the details of that. Maximum size for a style sheet, right? We can enforce a maximum size on our style sheet. Anyway, the list goes on. There's a few others there as well. But essentially, it is a brilliant checklist for us to go, is my site as fast as it could be? Is it as fast as the AMP site could be? And the answer is probably no, because you're not doing loads of these things, which we can do these days. We just don't when we build it. Tend to go, well, you know, AMP's there. Let's just let that do it. Let's just put Cloudflare in front of it. It'll be faster. And it's not the way to go. We should be building these things correctly from the start, progressively. Yeah, that's my mini rant. But that's it for this week. Thank you. Sorry for the delay between different podcasts. One of the comments in the survey was around the podcast, and they missed it, and they enjoyed the new format of getting a couple of updates, but not doing the guest thing as well. So I thought, that is a good kick up the bum for me to get back into it again and see how it goes. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to check out how I'm getting along with the redesign of the responsivedesign.is site, you can go to redesign.responsivedesign.is and check that out. I'm working with a team from Nodivide, Ryan and Dan, a developer and designer, both great, fantastic people. The designs are awesome. I really love them. Ryan is building it all up in a pattern lab for me, and then I'll be pulling those patterns out and dropping them into the site. I'm rebuilding it on WordPress as well, so I've had loads of fun with creating custom posts and advanced custom fields and different layouts, and trying to make WordPress as performant as possible as well. So it's been so much fun so far, but at the moment it is all just HTML and very little CSS. So it's just the migration part at the moment of moving all that content over, but it is loads of fun. So go check that out, redesign.responsivedesign.is. You can subscribe to the weekly newsletter if you haven't already at responsivedesign.is/newsletter. If you are on Twitter, you can follow us on at reswebdes, reswebdes. And you can follow us on Facebook as well. I think I post like two or three things to Facebook a week. And that's over at facebook.com/responsivewebdesigns as well. If you have any things that you want to know about, please do jump on, send me an email at justin@responsivedesign.is, and or tweet me, or Facebook me, do whatever you whatever your medium of choice is, send something across, ask me a question. I'm trying to move that stuff. Any of the questions that I answer will go into like the snippet show, which is the small bit of code at the beginning of each newsletter now, which sort of outlines something that you could be implementing with your sites as well. But thanks for listening. If you do have an ability to rate the podcast, please rate it up as highly as you possibly can and leave a nice comment. And until next week, yeah. Thanks for listening. Cheers, everyone. Bye.